Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
What is history? Well, that's obvious, you may think. It's the study of the past. But we could also say that history is the editing and interpretation of the past. One of the sources historians use in their research are archives. An archive is a collection of primary source documents that are generated by an organization or individual during their lifetime. I recently read a news story where, in an effort to save money, original research papers and journals were being digitized, then destroyed. And I wondered if the process of editing and interpreting the past had already started in that act. In this month's story, Ajit, a fourth-generation resident of the Arcology, GBT Ellesmere, is tasked with the job of clearing out old documents and by accident stumbles on some disturbing information that's not found in the official digital records. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 76, The Last Days of Darkness. Somewhere in some time, once discovered, the truth may not be all that welcome.
Looking as if they were just pinholes poked through a black dome, stars spread out in every direction. Ajit stood, transfixed for a moment by the illusion, staring through the thick glass of GBT Ellesmere. The Arcology, built four generations ago to protect the corporation's staff and families, had been placed on the northernmost tip of Ellesmere Island in the vain hope that the unforgiving Arctic climate might stop the blight. But despite the sub-zero temperatures, even the frozen rocks had quickly become hosts for it. Hiding somewhere out there in the endless night, Ajit imagined the infected ice floes slowly plowing their way through the frigid Arctic waters and involuntarily shivered. It was the last week of the darkness, a time when the sun hid so far below the horizon that even the twilight had fled. The afterglow of the Festival of Lights had worn off weeks ago, and despite the imminent return of the sun in a few days, Ajit felt like it was the darkest moment he had ever experienced. In an attempt to cheer himself up, Ajit had spent the last few nights looking at the family's files on his terminal. He had been particularly drawn to his great-great-grandparents' lives before the transmigration to the indoors. The pictures and vids showed a middle-aged woman and man who bore vaguely familiar features as they walked through shaded parks, ate in open-air patios while they laughed at life, and strode down narrow streets with no ceilings under a strangely blue sky. But rather than cheering him up, the images had made Ajit feel even more displaced. The handheld in his pocket vibrated, its rhythm telling him that he had a message from his supervisor. Ajit turned away from the window, pulled out the device, thumbed it on, and read the work order. The Information Integrity Unit of the Archives and Records Preservation Group, in its ongoing commitment to deliver high-quality information retrieval, open, transparent, and responsive information access for all residents to enable the seamless understanding of our collective situation, has, through consultation with all leaders, group coordinators, supervisors, and managers, mandated the removal of extraneous physical archival documents which duplicate information in the online databases. The message concluded with a long list of files which were to be immediately recycled. Ajit paged through the list and groused,
"I'll be doing this for months."
From what he could tell, it was most of the oldest archives. The freed up space was to be used for new food storage areas. Resigned to weeks of long days, Ajit put his handheld back in the pocket of his overalls and left for the elevators. Originally, all the lower levels had been used for long-term storage, warehouses, a museum, and the archives. Few visited the archives as they were on the most inaccessible of the sublevels. Those that did were either stubborn academics or runners from the library, who were occasionally sent down to pull original records for researchers. But as more and more of the collection had been digitized, even those visits had become rare. So Ajit was taken by surprise when he found a dark-haired woman a few years older than himself sitting in one of the disused cubicles in the foyer. She jumped when he opened the door, dragging a heavy portable recycler behind him.
"Who are you?"
the woman sternly demanded.
I'm maintenance.
Ajit, taken off guard, nervously responded.
"And who are you?"
The woman, who was dressed in the casual clothes of an academic and wore white gloves, glared back at him. She dug under a thick stack of paper files that lay strewn across the desk and pulled out a beat-up handheld, thumbed through several menus, then impatiently motioned for Ajit to come over. He immediately obeyed, and she indignantly thrust the device out for him to read. On its small screen was a research permit approved by the director of the Department of Social History, Research Division, which authorized one Alta Bitzer access to the physical archives. Ajit had never heard of it before.
"I'm studying the lives of the early ecology citizens,"
Alta defiantly said.
"Why are you here?"
"I'm a maintenance engineer. I have a work order to recycle duplicate documents to make way for a new food storage area."
Alta went back to work, dismissively waving Ajit away. The aisles between the stacks were too narrow for Ajit to wheel the recycler through, so he was forced to park the bulky thing in the main hallway and commandeer a small cart. As they were easier to access, he decided to start with the newest files, then remove the empty stacks as he progressed so he could get the recycler closer to the work area. Ajit looked at the work order and started up the first aisle, pushing the cart ahead of him, reading the labels.
S1900, S1914, S1929, S1933.
All had green dots pasted to their spines, indicating that they'd been scanned and were ready for disposal. The cart's wheels were stiff with disuse, randomly jamming, making it difficult to keep the uncooperative thing in the center of the aisle. At S1956, Ajit stopped to catch his breath, and looking around, his eyes came to rest on S1958 Patel. There was only one Patel family in the ecology, so Ajit's curiosity was immediately perked. Instinctively, he looked around to see where their closest security dome was, but the ceiling was oddly bare of the ever-present dark bulges. On impulse, his hand shot out and quickly pulled the file box from the shelf. Holding the crumbling container between his body and the cart, Ajit opened it and peered inside. Looking significantly older than in the vids, his great-great-grandparents stared back at him from a yellowed piece of paper clipped to the top of a stack of documents. Still hiding the box from view, he closed the lid, then surreptitiously placed it on the bottom shelf of the cart, well out of sight. No one would care, he rationalized. The file was marked for recycling anyway. Ajit worked for the rest of the day on the S2200 section, laboriously carting the dusty file boxes to the recycler, which hungrily devoured them, converting the paper and plastic into useful constituent elements. When his handheld vibrated, indicating the end of the shift, Ajit wheeled the recycler back to the front of the archives. The researcher Alta was still there, and intentionally ignored him as he passed, so it was easy to slip out with a file box concealed beneath his jumpsuit. Ajit quickly changed out of his soiled clothes in his cubicle, then went to the community cafeteria for a late dinner. Seating was determined by the size and importance of the family. For some reason that escaped Ajit, the Patels had dwindled to the point that in his generation there was just himself and two aging cousins. Neither of them had children, so if the Patels were to continue, it was up to Ajit. And so far, that seemed very unlikely. Maintenance jobs didn't rank high enough to merit more than a closet-sized living space.
Luck has never followed me.
Ajit sighed under his breath as he settled down into the tiny corner table that was reserved for his family. Savita, his 60-year-old cousin, was sitting with her back against the wall finishing her meal.
Did you know that your father always used that line too?
I didn't think anyone could hear me.
Don't worry about it, there's no one else around. Why are you late? Ravi had to leave, but I waited for you,
Savita said between measured bites. Ajit just shrugged.
It's my new assignment. There's almost an entire level of old paper documents to recycle.
Savita slowly put her fork down, then leaned forward, resting her elbows on the table.
You're better than that. Why are you still in maintenance? With the marks you had, of any of us, you have the potential to break the cycle and rise above all of this.
She gestured with a hand around their grimy corner of the cafeteria. Ajit's face suddenly flushed red, and he stood up bumping the table.
I've lost my appetite. None of us have done well, Savita. Luck has not shone on the Patels in a long time. Say hi to Cousin Ravi. I hope he still has his cleaning job.
Angry, Ajit quickly retired to his room and immediately called up his ancestors, Vids, then lost himself in their ancient fantasy lies, a past oddly like the storybook future promised by the Arcology executive. All the residents of GBT Ellesmere had to do to achieve it was to be patient and wait for the world outside to renew itself. A life worth waiting for and a better future for all. Ajit rolled the slogan around in his head. He jumped to an earlier video of his ancient relatives walking along a palm-fringed white sand beach. Curious to see if the physical files contained more about them, Ajit decided to retrieve the box from its hiding place behind a loose panel in the back of his tiny closet. As a precaution, he pulled the blanket off his bed and built a tent between the bed and desk, like he used to when he was a boy. Once the sheet blocked the prying eye of his terminal, he surreptitiously pulled the box out and opened it. Through a creased and soiled surface, Ajit could make out his ancestors standing stiffly against a concrete wall, looking accusingly into an unseen camera's clinical lens. They looked as if they had aged decades, and their carefree nature had been replaced by a sullen resignation. Ajit gently lifted the file which the photo was pinned to out of the box. As he tried to open it, the top leaf broke off, and its brittle contents spilled out on the floor. A yellowed sheet which bore the GBT logo lay on top. He gingerly picked it up and read,
Bella and Arid Patel, directors of the Cultural Memory Preservation Committee.
A bold line at the bottom of the page referenced another file, S-1958, AHPC. Ajit stared for what seemed like a long time before he collected the papers and gently put them back in the box and returned it to its hiding place. He took the tent down, then searched the official work records for the Patel family on his terminal, found Bella and Narid, then scanned their entry. Under a smiling photo of them dressed in precisely pressed cleaner's jumpsuits, a caption read, Lower Complex, Maintenance Staff. That night, Ajit could not sleep. The next morning he got up early so he could be at the family table to meet his cousins. Ajit slipped into the chair against the wall, cradling a steaming cup of caffeinated colored water in his hands to keep them warm, and watched as his cousins arrived and worked their way through the breakfast lines. Savita looked surprised.
Ajit, you're never here in the morning.
He motioned her into a chair. Ravi took the other.
Do either of you remember Bella or Narid Patel, our great-great-grandparents?
Ajit blurted out without saying hello. And good morning to you too, Ajit. Ravi smiled, taking a bite of something sculpted to look like eggs on the end of his fork and shoveling it into his mouth. Bella and Narid, of course I remember them. They were part of the first generation, laborers, like all the Patels. Why do you ask? Ajit didn't answer. Instead, he quickly gulped down his acrid-tasting drink, then got up and left. Ajit, where's your manners? Ravi called to his back, then shrugged and went back to his breakfast. Ajit was tired and irritable when he arrived at the archives. Alta, the researcher, was waiting for him when he stepped through the door into the climate-controlled interior.
Hey, stop!
She demanded in a tone that said she expected them to comply. Ajit tried to ignore her, but she moved to block his way.
What have you been doing?
She accused.
All the 2200 files are missing.
Ajit shrugged.
Like I told you yesterday, I'm here to clean out the old records that have been digitized. Everybody knows that wasted resources are a roadblock to our future.
He grimaced, realizing he had automatically responded with a much-repeated executive platitude.
Let me see that work order.
Alta to finally demand it. Ajit called the documents up on his handheld, then gave the device to her. She angrily grabbed it, then scanned the text, incredulity spreading across her face.
"You wait,"
she commanded, then turned away from Ajit.
"They don't understand. I need to contact my director and let her know what's going on down here."
Sensing a potentially ugly confrontation, Ajit volunteered to go and get a caffeinated drink while the irate researcher contacted her boss. So he decided to loiter in the small rest area on the next level up and read the community news feeds on the screens. He had barely sat down when his handheld impatiently vibrated. Ajit pulled it out of his pocket and read the message. He was to immediately return to the archive, and the deadline for completion had been moved up by a week. He got up and hurried back. When Ajit arrived, Alta was sitting at her overflowing workstation, glaring accusingly at him as he entered.
"They don't understand,"
the woman moaned.
"The digital records don't."
She paused and then dropped to a whisper.
"Not everything was scanned, you see. The official records are sort of just summaries with a lot of detail left out. That's why I need access to the originals. There's so much more here, especially for the first two generations."
"I'm sorry," Ajit apologetically began. "But it's not my call. And now, thanks to you, they've moved the deadline up, so I'll be working 18 hours a day."
He turned and testily started to walk away.
"You're a Patel, aren't you?"
she called after him.
"I saw it on your name tag. They're in my study. Did you know that? Do you know who they really were?"
Ajit stopped, and for a brief instant he was tempted. But with the ominous bulge of a security dome in direct line of sight, he ignored the question and continued back into the stacks.
"You don't understand what you're doing."
The words, edged with barely contained frustration, trailed after him. The delay had cost Ajit half the morning, so he was loading a cart as fast as he could, which caused him to sneeze from the dust he was kicking up, when he felt a light tap on his shoulder. Ajit jumped and swiveled to find Alta standing behind him, holding a file box in one hand and a handheld in the other. Before he could say anything, she blurted out,
"Okay, it's confirmed. But there's nothing that dictates the order that you have to do this in, is there?"
"No,"
Ajit admitted. Alta pushed a piece of crumpled paper into his hand.
"Please, take a look at this list. Can you at least leave these files to the last?"
"Why should I?"
Ajit shot back. Alta pushed the file box into his face and said,
"Compare this to what's in the digital record. You know I can't take files out of the archive without permission."
In a sudden burst of anger, Alta dropped the file box on the floor.
"Just read it, idiot. Then tell me what you find."
After she had left, Ajit gingerly picked the box up and looked at the label on its spine.
S-1958. AHPC.
He whispered in shock. It was the file that was referred to in the document he had looked at the night before. Out of habit, he found the correct stack and reshelved it, but later returned, pretending to clean out the files on that shelf, and took the box, hiding it under his loose coveralls. After a late dinner in the cafeteria to avoid his cousins, Ajit rushed back to his room, turned on a popular entertainment stream, then retired to his tiny washroom. Sitting on the cold concrete floor with the door closed and a towel hung over the mirror just in case, Ajit pulled the box out from his coveralls and retrieved the first paper sheet. Its title read, "Digital Archives Integrity Report by Bella and Narid Patel, Directors, Cultural Memory Preservation Committee." The second sheet he pulled out was titled, "Inquest into the Activities of Directors Patel and Patel." Ajit began reading, his hands trembling with excitement and apprehension. Reeling from the revelations of the night before, Ajit was not quite ready to confront Alta, so he arrived early at the archives and worked in the stacks furthest from her desk. It was still hard for him to accept that a Patel had ever risen above the status of laborer. But then it made sense. It explained the hard luck that followed him and every other Patel. and somewhere on one of the executive-level networks, he could imagine a standing order about his family. How ironic, Ajit thought, that he should be the one tasked to destroy the very records which would have vindicated his ancestors. On his way out at the end of the day, Ajit noticed that Alta had tacked a small note to the door. At first it looked like a file box number with a time under it, 8:30 p.m. Then he realized that if he dropped the prefix, it was the room number of a recreation area on the upper levels. The cafe and entertainment space on the 143rd floor was one of those places generally too expensive for maintenance workers, so Ajit received unwelcoming stares when he arrived. After paying a day's wages for a cup of real coffee, he chose a seat by the wall at the back where he could watch the door. He waited for almost a half an hour and was getting ready to leave when Alta finally arrived. She bought an expensive herbal tea, then came over to join him.
"Sorry I'm late, Ajit. I had to present an interim report to my director. It took a lot longer than I thought."
She slipped into the seat opposite him and started to nervously fidget with her cup.
"I read the file,"
Ajit blurted out.
"Shh,"
Alta scolded, glancing around to make sure no one had heard, then lowered her voice, forcing Ajit to lean in.
"When I started my research, I was looking for the texture of her ancestors' lies, tactile details that couldn't be translated into digital media. And the file boxes are full of little gems, handwritten notes on scraps of paper, family mementos, and small personal items that her ancestors treasured enough to preserve, but were never noted in the official record. But I've also discovered discrepancies, whole sections of her history that haven't been digitized, some important enough that they would change our understanding of who we are."
She stopped, then looked into Ajit's eyes.
"You know the truth now about your family's decline."
She leaned back in her chair, brushing away a dark strand of hair which was partially covering one eye.
"My interim report didn't go that well, Ajit. My director was still thinking I was just enhancing our knowledge of the past, filling in the details, not rewriting it. I guess I've misjudged. It hasn't been long enough yet to create an appetite for our real history, as unfortunately your ancestors found out. And there's more. Did you know it's safe to go outside? It's been safe for the last 25 years, but the Executive Council has said nothing about it. The blight, Ajit. We knew the retrovirus that causes the blight would eventually evolve into something harmless. But the mutation rate, documented in the physical files down in the archives, is 100 times faster than the official rate in the digital records."
"Couldn't the older data be wrong? Surely we know more now,"
Ajit began to object. Alta cut him off.
"You read the file. You know the truth. Look, I have to go and adjust my research before morning to align with the director's original expectations."
Alta sighed, then stood up without finishing her drink and left. Ajit lived through another sleepless night, his newfound knowledge spinning around in his mind like a tornado, tearing away the roots of long-held beliefs. The next morning, he arrived late at the archive, tired and in turmoil. Oddly, the door was locked, so Ajit had to key himself in. He propped the door open with his foot, then shoved the heavy recycler through in front of him and entered after it. Ajit looked around the foyer, but Alta wasn't there. Her desk, which was always overflowing with paper documents, was empty, and it even looked as if the dust had somehow been replaced.
"Alta!"
Ajit tentatively called out, but only the hiss of the ventilation system answered. Already behind schedule, he had no choice but to push his machine back to the place where he had left off the day before. Alta didn't show up all that day, nor the next, and Ajit became concerned. After the fourth day, he skipped dinner to spend the evening searching the Arcology's digital records to find out what had happened. He assumed her project had simply been scrapped, but when he scanned the list of social history staff, his heart went cold. There was no Alta Bitzer listed. Ajit nervously searched through the general arcology directory and again came up blank. There was a Bitzer family living on the managerial levels, but there was no Alta among them. In a sudden panic, Ajit checked his hiding spot at the back of the closet. He pushed one hand behind the loose panel and felt for the file boxes. To his relief, they were still there, but Ajit realized he couldn't keep them any longer. They needed to be protected. He needed to hide them somewhere that they'd never be destroyed. Ajit waited until the work shifts were about to change. Then, with the two file boxes tucked away under his bulky overalls, he made his way to the ground level, where the exterior maintenance unit was located, and waited outside. No one bothered him. After all, he was just another laborer going to work. After the last of the night shift sleepily left, Ajit slipped inside. The space was large, bleak, and cold. Equipment and environment suits hung along the walls. At the far end was an airlock with a large yellow biohazard symbol emblazoned on it. Ajit had once briefly apprenticed in the unit before his fear of heights disqualified him from working on the outside walls. Quickly, before the day shift arrived, Ajit slipped into one of the environment suits, sealed the files into a specimen case that the recon crews used to gather plant samples in, picked up a pry bar, and cycled through the airlock. Outside, it was the last day of the Arctic night, but the sun still hadn't peaked above the horizon, so with the exception of a faint pink glow to the south, the frozen landscape was in darkness. Ajit decided not to turn his helmet light on. He didn't want to be spotted. Instead, he used the yellow glow of lights from the windows near Arcology to guide him. He stumbled along a rocky ridge where the wind had scoured the snow away so he wouldn't leave any footprints. After walking for about 15 minutes, he left the ridge and walked to the bottom of a small steep valley. Ajit looked to check if anyone could see him from the Arcology, but the somber gray structure was hidden by the rocky walls of the valley. He found a spot at the base of a large boulder, then took out the pry bar and began to dig. An hour later, sweating inside the suit from the effort, Ajit walked back along the ridge. He stopped to catch his breath and looked at the imposing ancient walls of GBT Ellesmere, thinking. They were no longer the safe vessel that would protect him until the new future came. Instead, they had become a prison built on lies. His ancestors had tried to expose this, and every Patel sense had paid for it. Ajit hoped that someday, when the time was right, a future generation would come out here and find his gift to them, the truth. GBT, Global Biotechnologies, hadn't been protecting them from the blight that had rendered the world poisonous. GBT had invented and released it. Ajit noticed the very top of the huge structure begin to glow and turned to face the first rays of the sun.
"For the last 25 years,"
he muttered to himself, then opened his faceplate and breathed in the sharp cold air. He exhaled a cloud of steam and laughed. It was only then that he heard the footsteps approaching him from behind. And suddenly there was pain, bolts of electricity shooting through his chest. The newborn sun, still struggling to rise above the icy horizon, winked out, and Ajit fell onto the frozen rocky ground in a leaden heap. Someone prodded Ajit.
"He seems to be through the worst of it now,"
a distant clinical voice noted. Ajit opened his eyes and found that he was staring at a white ceiling.
"Mr. Patel, what's the last thing you remember?"
"Let me think. I was standing in front of a window, watching the stars, waiting for my shift to start."
"Excellent," the voice said. "You're going to make a full recovery."
The thanks for listening to Makeshift Story 76, The Last Days of Darkness. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's episode. And as always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us or write a review on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. We love hearing from you, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. If you're looking for more great speculative fiction podcasts, but are tired of wading through iTunes only to find dead feeds and disappointing episodes, we'd recommend checking out Synthetic Voices. Each month, podcast critic Jimmy Rogers recommends a few of his favorite episodes from among a wide variety of FS podcasts. So head over to scienceismagic.com to discover new free engaging stories. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's story was written and read by Ellen V. Hare. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David Hume. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivative License, which means you're free to share our stories, just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.